Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome, everyone, to your Rock'em Nation podcast. This is Dive Cuts. I believe we're on episode 5. My name is Sam Snelling. With me, as always, is Matt Harris. Matt, how are things in Indianapolis tonight?
Very cold, very blustery, but it's exciting because the Pacers are tipping off tonight, and I look forward to flipping back to League Pass when we're done, because now we get to fully utilize that resource to waste time.
The addition of League Pass to my life, I'm feeling is going to be an overall net negative for my own time management.
My fiance is terrified. She's absolutely terrified.
Yeah. I've already apologized to my wife, I think, 3 times, and we haven't even, like, tonight is the regular season. Like, I've spent way too much time watching preseason basketball. I don't think I've watched preseason basketball in like 10 or 15 years, but here we are. Matt, big news.
Really?
There was an announcement Monday evening. The Mizzou Athletic Department leaked a little video of some classic Missouri-Kansas highlights, followed by Missouri head coach Konzel Martin simply looking into the camera and saying, "It's back." And that's because the border war is back. Missouri and Kansas are going to play basketball again. How excited on a scale of 1 to 1,000 are you?
557.
That seems low.
I think it's because this felt more inevitable. It was more of a question of if. It was not a question of if, but a question of when. This would happen. There's always one, if I'm just going to be craven, both schools can make a lot of money off of this, and that's one motivation. And two, I think when you get down to it, there's, you know, just a sense of shared history, a sense of, you know, it's kind of been like a phantom limb for the last 7 years. And as much as, you know, Missouri fans, you know, want to profess that they're happy or in the SEC, and Kansas fans want to say they don't miss Missouri, I just think that's an outright lie, and it's been a lie. And, you know, we've just, you know, once the animosity tamped down and, you know, both schools kind of realized what opportunity just in pure monetary terms was there. It was just when, you know, the right kind of political mix was going to be right to bring it back. And I think now's, and we can talk about this, I think just now has kind of the right confluence of factors to revive this thing. So I was happy to see that it's back. I'm glad that, you know, there's, you know, a familiar touchstone there that can sort of link generations of fans on both sides. But as far as like, shocked? Not really. So,
Shocked. Excited.
I'll be excited when the game is actually here, and you know we can, you know, talk about, you know, how it's going to absolutely turned the Power and Light District into a riot zone. So I'll be happy when we actually get close to the game itself. But it's like a sugar high. You're excited for like the first 5 or 6 minutes, and then you're like, oh, wait, it's another 13 months before this game actually happens.
It is a long way away. There is an agreement for anybody who hasn't seen it. We'll just kind of run down the details. There's an agreement for 6 games over the course of 6 seasons starting next year with a game at the Sprint Center. Then we have alternating home and home games for 4 years before they finish back at the Sprint Center. Sprint Center being in Kansas City, for anybody who's listening who's not familiar with that, which I can't imagine you aren't. But I like this setup a lot, mainly because I really think the St. Louis location works for Bragg and Rights really well. I like that they went ahead and started with kind of a neutral site, which I think you could maybe not call it neutral, but it's certainly an embattled territory. We'll just kind of put it that way. But Kansas City is in between, and then kind of being able to have these games back in Allen Fieldhouse and back at Mizzou Arena, I think is a really, really smart play, and it's going to make sort of the level of excitement for those games, I think, kind of go over the top. And then the timing of it, which is sort of right at the end of the semester, is to make sure that students are still around, to make sure that the excitement level, is able to kind of be there for the on-campus games, I think is really important. And not that people wouldn't show up in droves to watch Missouri and Kansas play, whether students were there or not, but I just think it's always better when you have that energy from a big-time student section.
Yeah, I do think the addition of Kansas City is just nice. I think it sort of gives a nice sampling of what the rivalry's been. You get obviously get the on-campus site, so there's the nod to history, but you also play it in a Big 12 town, and I've always sort of sensed that Kansas City, more than St. Louis, is a little bit more of a college sports town, and I think it fits with the culture there. I think it'll be reminiscent of, meetings in the Big 12, Big 8 tournament that have happened there over the years. So I think it's just a nice mix, and I think it's just a great event to sort of take to your alumni. Obviously Lawrence is a little bit more geographically proximal to Kansas City, but I still think it's nice to put a game there, give your alums from both sides, an event to go to. You can put events around that. I think it's just a good deal in general. It also feels more true to the spirit of the rivalry. Bragg and Rights has been entrenched in St. Louis for 3 or 4 decades now. So it'd be cool if we wanted to go to Bragg and Rights on campuses. I think it'd be awesome if, Illinois came into Mizzou Arena or Mizzou had to go to Champaign-Urbana, but it's not true to kind of the spirit of the event right now. So, for a resumption of hostilities, this feels like kind of the best way to give it some oomph and to give it some juice. And if this thing, proves durable, then I think maybe you slowly transition away from Kansas City and you just go back to a home and home series. But for now, it seems like just the best way to kick it back off.
Yeah, I like that they structured it this way. I just think that I like the inclusion, like you said. And as a St. Louisan, I think I can admit I do think Kansas City is a better college sports town than St. Louis is. I think St. Louis is probably leans a little bit more professional. There, even the NBA and NFL seem to be more popular here than college football and basketball, which I don't know that that's necessarily the case in Kansas City. So, I think the proximity of Kansas City to Lawrence, to Manhattan, to Lincoln, and Columbia, as well as, not being that far away from Iowa, sort of is able to bring a lot of those alumni to an area and really kind of pump up the college sports. So even if they extended this for like another 20 years, I would still like to see them like every few years. And I like the structure of kind of doing one, then four, then one. I would like to kind of see that keep going where you sort of have a pattern to rely on to know that, you know, okay, so maybe a mid-December trip to, you know, Kansas City to watch the game is more attainable and more easy to kind of, you know, get to than trying to schedule a trip to go see or try to get a ticket into Allen Fieldhouse or Mizzou Arena.
And I feel like Norm Stewart would point out that 2 out of every 3 years, that game is on the Missouri side of the border. So I think that there, you know, slight geographic lean towards the Missouri side. So, you know, borders exist and we will honor them. So I feel like Norm would be happy with that stipulation. But yeah, it's just a unique setup. And you know, I tweeted this last night, good on the administrations for doing this. You know, I don't know what prompted, you know, Bill Self's change of heart. I don't particularly care what made Bill sort of move off his stance that, you know, this game wasn't going to happen. I'm glad that they relented. I'm glad that, you know, Missouri and Kansas each kind of agreed to give up a home game here to put it on.
Well, how conspiratorial do we want to get on this podcast?
You can get as conspiratorial as you want.
I know we both have our a little bit of cynicism in us, and I tend to think that there is probably a little bit of the NCAA lurking in the back of the minds of KU athletics and their incentive to kind of schedule this game, because if the NCAA decides to sort of lay the hammer down, you know, Kansas can sort of shrug and say, hey, like, you know, maybe this year or the next couple of years are a wash, but we have, you know, Missouri's ask it to kick and to look forward to that. And isn't that great, fans? Like, you all love kicking Missouri's ass, so let's go do it. I think there's probably a little bit of that maybe provided some additional incentive. I also think that the NCAA kind of coming in and levying the allegations maybe was able to weaken Bill Self enough in the athletic department enough to kind of give Jeff Long the rope that he needed, because it really does seem like Long has a good relationship with Jim Sterk, and that's something that really hasn't existed at Kansas, you know, since Missouri left for the SEC, and rightfully so. Like, I understand the bitterness that Kansas and Kansas fans and a lot of boosters and whatever maybe felt for how Missouri handled their exit and leaving everybody behind and all that history, blah blah blah. Like, I understand that side of it, but I also tend to think that if they were put in the same place, that they would have done it just the same. And to say otherwise is kind of ignorant of the situation that the Big 12 was in. You know, at that time, with sort of, you know, Texas and Oklahoma and all those schools kind of threatening to leave for the Pac-12, and basically looking at a league where, I mean, Kansas State, Missouri might have been scrambling to try to get into like the Mountain West just to have a conference, and that just, I mean, if you have the SEC, which at the time was probably the and still is the most powerful football conference in the country, knocking at your door saying, do you want to join us? I think it's a obvious no-brainer.
Well, I think you hit on a point that I sort of come back to, which I just think the personalities involved in those moves and that strife have kind of cycled out. Mike Alden's retired. Gary Pinkel's retired. You know, Brady is no longer chancellor. So you've got, and on the Kansas side, you know, there have also been administrative changes that have happened in the last 7 years. There are new ADs. There, you know, at least in Missouri, there's a new basketball coach that sort of understands kind of the lay of the land and what this rivalry means. So I just think there was enough kind of refreshing that happened at the administrative level that those two sides could kind of come back together without that sense of animus there or that sense of betrayal. Or, you know, just kind of those emotions that stuck in their craw from, you know, the schism that happened 7 years ago. So I do think that there's value in sort of having new people kind of take a look at the problem and sort of say, okay, how can we work around this? And so that's where my mind sort of goes. I just think at the same point in time, I think from Missouri's end, there's a willingness to give because, you know, for as much as the SEC's been a fruitful financial situation, you know, we talked about this before we came on air, Missouri's still a relative plebe in that conference, and there hasn't been a rivalry that's emerged there. And, you know, I doubt Kansas fans would want to openly say that, but the Sunflower Showdown doesn't pack as much of just the same visceral oomph as what the Border War did. And so I think there's just been, you know, both sides, you know, I remember Bill Self saying, you know, several years ago, I don't know if in 5 years people will remember the rivalry, or if in 10 years they'll remember the rivalry. Well, that didn't really happen. You know, nothing kind of patched over that. And, you know, memories, you know, didn't go away. You know, there are fan base, you know, there are segments of the fan base that, you know, don't want to play come hell or high water, but I think most people wanted it back, and there was just, the conditions were ripe to sort of, you know, hit a reset. And I think it's just nice to see that that happened.
Well, anybody that doesn't want to play this game doesn't want to play out of a level of animus that means the game should be played.
Yeah, it's actually proof that we should be doing this.
Right. Like, there's no, like, logical reason for the game not to be played. If the reason that you're giving, you know, and I understand, like, the aspect of, okay, so for the last 5 years, Missouri's been terrible. It doesn't really help Kansas. Well, there's been plenty of games in Kansas' schedule.
Kansas brings a lot of really bad teams to Allen Field.
Right. You know, and it's like, just like there's a way that you could have made this work if you really wanted it to work. And I think that there is, you know, obviously the saying is that time heals all wounds. And to a level it does. And maybe there's going to be a segment of each fan base that'll never be able to like get over kind of, you know, whatever animus is there. But I think that after a certain period of time, you just sort of look at this and you think, like, it's stupid that we're not playing. Like, can you imagine if Duke and UNC split up and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we're just not going to play this game anymore. Like, it, and realistically, like, I think the Missouri-Kansas rivalry is maybe not at the exact same level, but it's right behind Duke-UNC as probably the, you know, the greatest rivalry in college basketball. And right up there with, I mean, I can't really think of any off the top of my head that I would say that are better.
I think and we've talked about this before, I could understand KU's position of that Missouri made a conscious decision here. Missouri, you know, used its agency to go find stability in the SEC. And that did not, and once that happened, once they unchained themselves from the Big 12 and the scheduling demands that come with it, it became, you know, KU's choice whether to continue it or not. And, you know, if KU didn't want to do it, I said, you know, hey, that's within their right. Missouri decided that it wanted to trade. And I do think Missouri made that decision, whether or not fans want to admit it. And Missouri traded some history for future stability. And, you know, you can say KU would have made the same decision and that it's just sour grapes. It doesn't remove the fact that that's what Missouri did. And, right. You know, it's disingenuous to suggest otherwise. Just as it's disingenuous, though, for Kansas to say that, you know, oh, you know, we just can't make it work. And, you know, oh, we have everything to go. But then you're scheduling Colorado and Nebraska. Both sides were disingenuous in this. It was just a matter of how long each was going to, you know, kind of stamp their foot and hold their breath. And I think we've gotten to the point now, almost a decade out, where, like we said, whether it's, you know, Kansas staring down, you know, the potential barrel of NCAA sanctions or leadership changes, everyone just got tired of, you know, putting up those facades and just got down to the business of making it work again. And I think that's what I'm going to keep coming back to here. Everybody just gave up the charade and just decided that, hey, let's just make this work. And that's what I'm happy about, because it was the sensible thing to do. And I'm glad it finally, you know, some common sense finally prevailed.
I am too. Do you have odds on whether or not Bill Self is on the sideline for that game next year?
I don't, but that'll be interesting.
I can't get anybody, like, actually to say yes or no. I asked, like, several contacts, you know, including people that have been in the podcast here, like, what their thoughts were, yes or no, and everybody was noncommittal on that.
I mean, I hope he's... I kind of hope he's there, because I think it'll just be great if he has to walk out and sort of coach the game, which he's seemed hell-bent on not resuming again. I think it'll be... And plus, I think you have to sort of consider, you know, Bill's got, you know, skin in this too. Missouri picked someone else instead of him 2 decades ago. You know, it came down to him and Quinn, and they picked Quinn. And, you know, I've always sort of thought in the back of his mind that there's been a little desire to, you know, say fuck you every time that they play. You know, you didn't pick me. You know, now look what you get. I just think that there's... I like having that element. It just adds another layer to kind of the drama. So I kind of hope Bill's there, you know, just because I think it just adds another flavor to the mix.
Yeah, and I will say that part of the way I feel about Kansas extends to how I feel about Bill Self, who I respect very much as a basketball coach, just like I respect Kansas as a basketball program and the winning that they've done, the way that they play. They're well coached. They play hard. They look like a really great basketball team. But I don't like Bill Self. I think he is disingenuous, and I think that he's always been a cheat. And so I can't say that I've ever felt the same way about Roy Williams. I always wanted Missouri to beat Kansas when Roy was there.
I loved watching Roy's Kansas teams play. I will be
maybe that's part of it also is the way that he played there, the way that he plays at North Carolina. Like it's wonderful basketball. But yeah, so I would say that I definitely, root for Kansas to lose more so because of Bill Self and his coaching staff than necessarily like the guys that wear the uniforms, because I've never really been a root against players guy, even when, you know, all the Mizzou fans were booing Ryan Robertson for some reason. I've never really felt like that guy, but I definitely would like Bill Self to walk out on the sideline. And I would really like if he's still there for the return trip to Columbia. Like, that would be a really great moment, and I would love to hear the boos rain down. I'm skeptical that it happens because I'm wondering if there's going to be some NCAA penalties and Bill's just going to be like, you know, screw this. I'm going to go to the NBA and make millions of dollars and just do that. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I would do that almost regardless of NCAA infractions, because being an NBA basketball coach seems pretty cool. You know, no recruiting. You just got to show up every day, track pants, t-shirt, scout, run a practice.
That's why, like, I love the idea, like, all these people are just like, oh, like, why didn't Quinn Snyder work out in college? Why is he, like, why did it work for him at the pro level? I'm like, because he hated recruiting. Like, once you realize, like, that recruiting is hard, and recruiting is pretty easy at Duke. Like, it's always hard, but it's as easy as recruiting is going to get at Duke, right? I mean, you pretty much walk in the door, and you can get any kid you really want. You just have to show up with Coach K. And when he had to get out and do that different kind of recruiting, like it's harder. But if you could just show up and coach, everyone always said from like an X's and O's standpoint, it's like there was nobody who could really, you know, match Quinn Snyder. So I feel a lot of that with Bill Self. Like Bill Self is a really, really great basketball coach. If you remove all the things that he's done which all pertain to recruiting, and just make him a basketball coach. Like, I think that's a win for him, and maybe even whether or not you like him. I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, I'm that's why I'm intrigued to see what John Beilein does this year. But he does not have a very good basketball team in Cleveland, so I also feel sad for John Beilein this year. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with the date for this moving forward. That to me, I think, is really interesting, and you kind of hit on it earlier. I would love for them to keep it in mid-December. I would love for it to stay there. Just put it on stop day Saturday, let the kids come out, let that be sort of the last, you know, big event before they got to hunker down and do finals and go home for the semester. And also dropping border war and bragging rights within a 10 to 14 day span is just a lot of catharsis around the holidays. It's just a lot of emotional energy gets let out. And you can channel whatever you want into that. I just think that's the time of the year to kind of drop those games when work schedules are open and when folks can, you know, just make room and make time for those games. So if they could find a way to keep it in mid-December, that would just be fantastic. And also, I think I mentioned this last night to you, by that point, those teams will have, like, worked through the kinks, will have an idea of what rotations are. Like, you're going to start seeing teams that are kind of cohesive, and that's what you want in that game. You want both teams to feel like they have a sense of who they are and what they do well, and, you know, have a sense of, you know, that this game, you know, is one that they can bring their best effort for. So that's why I'd love to keep it in mid-December. So that's my pitch for don't move it. Just keep it where it is. It's great. You did it right the first time. Don't change it.
Yeah. No, I like it. So I think we can move on from the Bragging Rights talk, considering that we've already spent about 20 minutes on it, and the game isn't even going to be played for another 14 months, 13 months, something like that. But there is one other sort of topic we wanted to get to before we get on out of here. And that, Matt, is our vindication.
I don't know if it's vindication because it has to, like, actually exist in, you know, 4.5 months from now. So you call
it in my best Captain Holt voice.
Don't do it.
Vindication!
Don't do it. You're not Andre Brower.
It was pretty good, though. I mean, I wasn't doing an impression. I was doing more of like a same authority. Like, we are vindicated. So what I'm talking about, everybody, KenPom, everybody's favorite advanced statistics analyst for college basketball, dropped his preseason rankings for everyone to see. And your Missouri Tigers, are projected to finish 39th. That is good for 6th in the SEC. Just one spot behind 38th ranked LSU. And a record of 10-8, which weirdly enough is what I projected them as. And I think you did too, right?
Yeah, I am at 10-8.
I feel really good. Because we've long thought that now Missouri, I don't think the rest of us thought Missouri is going to be great. Missouri would have to have a lot of things go their way for them to be great, but we thought they would be pretty good. And for all the preseason polls that have come out, including Matt Norlander's 1 through 350, what is it, 353 now?
Yeah, 353.
He had Missouri 82nd, and it sort of goes in line with this Missouri is not going to be good, because Missouri hasn't been good for several years, even though they managed to make the NCAA tournament just a couple years ago. But I like looking at the rankings. So there's always going to be fluctuation. I think you look at the top, yeah, Kentucky, Florida, we all expected that, right? You look at the bottom, Vanderbilt. Yeah, everybody in the world has Vanderbilt last in the SEC.
Yeah, I feel bad for Vanderbilt. Everyone says you're going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Computers, coaches, bloggers, writers, there's no safe haven for you. Everybody says you are going to be garbage. It's rough for them. I feel bad, you know.
Yeah, good luck to Coach Stackhouse and his Commodores. They're going to need it this year. At the very bottom of that, and I mean not super spread out. So there's between 38 and 70. There's basically everybody in the SEC outside of five teams. So LSU, Missouri, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Georgia, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Alabama are all in that group. Alabama's at the bottom. And I have them higher than Missouri in my preseason picks. But I kind of get, especially now, like their depth court is, or their depth in the front court has taken some hits this preseason. They've lost two of their guys to season-ending injuries. And their front court wasn't great last year. With maybe the exception of Dante Hall, who is a nice player. So I feel good that what we expect is sort of lined up for Missouri, but it really isn't for Alabama, and now I'm starting to question my own picks.
I looked at this the other day. We are higher on Missouri, Alabama, and Tennessee than KenPom, Bart Torovic, or the SEC media. We are less bullish on Auburn and Georgia. That's basically where we diverge. Other than that, our picks are within one to two, or within one spot of almost everybody else. So I think that's sort of natural, because I think we view Auburn as taking a bigger hit in the backcourt than some national and SEC writers do, but you know, Bruce Pearl's shown, you know, that he's been able to rally troops there before, so maybe he can do it again. Georgia, I think you and I are of the opinion that Anthony Edwards is going to get a lot of touches and going to have an insane usage rate. Rashawn Hammonds could be a really, really nice combo forward for them, but the rest of the lineup is just it's scattershot right now. And
He's got some talent, but there's a lot of guys who need a little seasoning.
When Tom Crean has a young basketball team, they turn the ball over a crap load, and they don't play defense. Like, they come in like 1/10 or 1/20th in adjusted defensive efficiency. Like,
and I watched part of their game against Valdosta State, who I believe is Division II. It was an exhibition game. Yeah, they were not defending.
They're going to trade buckets. Like I've said, if there's like a league pass team you should have in the SEC, it's Georgia. Because every game is going to be up and down. Anthony Edwards is going to do a lot of stuff. And at the end, you're just going to be like, what the hell happened? Like, any range of outcomes is in play. You know, and when Tom Crean has an experienced roster, they can be a death machine. When they are young, it's just, you're all over the spectrum and the pendulum in terms of outcomes. It's fun to watch if you have no rooting interest in the game, but I watched it nearly mentally just destroy Indiana fans for 4 years. So it's something to behold if you don't have a stake in it. But in general, I think the middle of the league is going to be fluid. We've said that for a long time.
I will point out, like, he does have Alabama at the bottom at 13. This is KenPom.
But look,
they're ranked 70th, but it's eight. The record is 8-10. Like, that's the margin for error. I realize there's a lot of like those 56, you know, 44 kind of games that are gonna, you know, go one way or the other. But it's gonna be a lot of. Somebody gets a key injury at some point.
He's got 10 teams within two games of each other in the standings. And like the critical thing is, look at the teams out. Look at Alabama at 70th, South Carolina at 69th, Mississippi at 60th, A&M at 58, Georgia at 55. That's five teams within 15 spots of one another. Like, Bama very well could fin it if it really is that tight. If that's really how things shake out, Bama could be 12th if the tiebreakers go wrong for them. Like, that's where we are, realistically, is if it really is that muddled in the middle, we're going to be looking at, you know, 3 and 4 team tiebreakers and trying to figure out how all this stuff shakes out. So the bigger deal to me is looking at the overall KenPom ranking and where they are, and then kind of trying to correlate that to where a team might be on the seed line. And if you're looking at Missouri solely, 38th or 39th is around between a 7 or a 9 seed, which that puts you solidly on the bubble. Like, you're in, but you're not an absolute lock. So if Missouri's hanging around the bubble all year, you know, goes 9-3 in non-con, I think that would line up with what a lot of people, at least local media and, you know, us.
Yeah, local media.
And I'll give credit, you know, to you know, anybody that's been around the program. I think that they've got the same sense that we do and the same sort of outlook, or a similar outlook for this team. I think that they, you know, have a little bit more bullish perspective on what's there. But I also think they, like us, are a little bit more attuned to kind of the context and what happened last year and what produced a 15-17 result. So I don't think people that follow Mizzou closely, whether it's coaching staff, fans, writers, I think everyone's pretty much in agreement that 13th looks really low, and that, you know, 82nd in a ranking looks really low. And that's not because they're, you know, biased or because that they have an affinity. I think it's they have a really good handle on where this program is and sort of what this roster looks like. So it's nice to see that, you know, that's reflected a little bit in KenPom, and that, you know, what people are sort of seeing, you know, closer to the ground may actually have some merit. So that is a positive. So I do want to at least underscore that, you know, people who pay attention to this program consistently, you know, are all sort of, you know, vindicated in what they've been thinking about this team so far.
And it's also another thing, like, on the SEC media part of it, it's sort of easy to understand that there's probably a fair amount of those guys that are spending a lot of their time covering football. You know, we're sent to kind of cover this basketball event and vote on a preseason poll. And since they're in football mode, they basically like took it last year's standings, looked at what each team lost, and probably saw that Missouri lost their leading scorer and another starting forward, and weren't very good last year. So it's just like, and that's sort of like, in my estimation, what is probably happening with a lot of the SEC media writers who, like I said, I'm assuming most of those guys are probably covering the football team, which you and I both know, like football really tends to drive more traffic. You know, maybe with Missouri being the outlier because we're obviously a basketball school. But that becomes one of those things where, not to completely just explain away somebody's terrible analysis, but it's certainly a rationale that makes sense for why somebody would sort of pick a team that has a lot of promise and certainly has a lot going for it as low as 13th. Like, I just don't see how you could think that they would be worse than they were last year with so many of the pieces coming back and getting better. Like, that usually happens from year to year, so...
Yeah, I think the other thing to keep in mind too is, and this is the annual spiel I give, KenPom does not truly reflect the current season until about the second or third week of December. Mr. Kim Pomeroy is very smart and realizes that, like, you have to have some old data in your algorithm in order to project forward. So what he does is it slowly basically it the mix of data that goes in eventually flushes old data, but that takes about the first 6 to 7 weeks of the season to do that. So really a key point to, like, check in to get a gauge of how the 2019-2020 version of Missouri looks is probably, like, around the end of the first semester in Columbia, so around December 15. That's probably a good date. So that'll be another point to check in to be like, all right, we've seen 9 to 10 games live. We've been able to, you know, review some data from that. This let's do a check-in point at the, you know, a third of the way through the year, and that's when I think you'll start to see things kind of really become truly accurate and reflective of what the league looks like. So that's my usual spiel, but I feel like we need to say it every year just so people don't freak out early in the season.
We're like 2 weeks away from basketball and from we college are. Basketball, I should say. We are, you and I are probably both going to go watch some NBA basketball after we finish wrapping here. But yeah, just about 2 weeks away. And the college basketball season will be here. I'm excited. Got the previews rolling. Is everybody reading the previews? I hope you are.
Please read the previews. We spend a lot of time on them.
There's a lot of work that goes into those. Please click on them.
We promise you'll learn something. We don't know if it's what you'll want to read, but you'll learn something if you read them. I say that as a guy who wrote 2,900 words on Jeremiah Tillman's post-up skills. So we're doing a lot of stuff right now.
There's a lot of content on the website these days. Just today, we posted like 8 things, I think.
I'll count. We did 1, 2, there's 6 up there now, 7. Yeah, 8 things, and then there was, 8. There were 8 things posted today.
That's a lot. I encourage you all to read them. I think Josh's little spiel on Konzo Martin kind of helping revive the border war is a good one. I really enjoyed Nate's Beyond the Box Score. I don't know how many people are reading that with regularity, but really happy with it. Nate is putting out, and his Beyond the Box Score has a little editorial that's also kind of fun. We talked about the wing position for the basketball team, mainly Torrence Watson and Javon Pickett. We being you, me, and Josh. There was a depth chart. Sammy Stava also talked to Asiya Blue to talk the upcoming Kentucky game. Nate released his power rankings and the number 10 Ole Miss Rebels preview. So we have now released Ole Miss, Georgia, Texas A&M, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt previews with tomorrow. I'm assuming a lot of people are probably going to listen to this podcast on Wednesday. Do you remember who's 9? Is it Mississippi State?
Yeah, Mississippi State is tomorrow.
Mississippi State's tomorrow.
And then I think Arkansas is Friday. So we are also, we're also bullish on Arkansas. We're probably more bullish than some are on Arkansas.
So. 8. Although I do kind of agree with Ken Pom's metrics that they may not be great defensively.
They don't have a lot.
I think they're going to put up a lot of points.
They will score. I think they're going to score. It'll depend on if they can get. I haven't heard if Connor Vanover has earned a waiver or not. If they could get Connor Vanover eligible, that would probably help them if they had a big 7-foot dude parked in front of the rim.
They could also stretch the floor on offense.
Yeah, they could really use Connor Vanover. If they get Connor eligible, then I will probably reassess my thoughts on Arkansas. I think I had them like 9th or 10th. But if they get him eligible, he might be worth 1 or 2 spots.
So follow Matt on Twitter, because he will send out tweets that include links to things that you might want to read. He will also engage you and talk about whiskey and IPAs.
Yeah. Yep. Just like any yuppie 34-year-old man. Whiskey and IPAs.
That's the move. And then follow me on Twitter also. I will also tweet out links and retweet many of our current crop of writers who will send you all the Rock'em Nation content. And trying to think. I talk a little bit about whiskey, but a little bit about beer. Also, anybody, if you're a really big stout lover, you can go to Perennial's website and sign up for the Abraxas event, which you get like four bottles of Abraxas, and they're all different variations. They're all awesome. Highly encourage you to do that. But that's the last of this podcast.